Hi there, and welcome to this episode of A Couple Takes on MS. Hi, I'm Dan Digman.
And hi, it's me, Jennifer Digman.
And we're A Couple Takes on MS. I'm walking.
I'm rolling.
But together, we're moving forward. And this, I mean, this is going to be a big issue or a big episode because we're going to talk about moving forward, and I think this is like a reality check for one Dan Digman, if I may talk about myself in the third person.
Yes, please.
Ask permission to talk myself in third person. But anyway, for Dan Digman, I think there's just a reality check where we talk about moving forward, but we have a really, really, really big appointment coming up with our neurologist, and I don't know. I guess you tell me, and I'm not blaming you because I love you so much with all of my heart and soul.
Thank you, and I love you, but it's just the reality. I will set the stage for our listeners. We had a support group meeting yesterday. Dan has run the local group for the National Multiple Sclerosis Society. For a number of years, the entire time we've been married, as a matter of fact.
Well, even before that, 26 years, but who's counting?
I think you are.
I am.
And that's awesome.
I'm pretty proud of that.
You deserve that. So I don't want to belittle that. But we were getting ready for our group yesterday, and it's very serendipitous that we had group, and we also have a neurologist visit, an in-person neurologist visit coming up. And I don't know how long it's been since we have actually gone to Ann Arbor. Our neurologist is at the University of Michigan Hospital, and it's been a while.
I think it's been about a little over a year, 2 years.
A lot of virtual visits, which is, if there's a bright spot of pandemic, memories of the pandemic, it's just getting used to seeing doctors virtually. But anywho, I digress. So we're getting ready for our support group meeting. And I say to Dan, what if Dr. Braley diagnoses you or reclassifies you, if that's fair to say, as you are now living with secondary progressive MS? I mean, let's be honest, Diggs, it's been a long time since you were diagnosed, and the disease is always progressing, and I didn't want to put that thought in your head, and I don't want to let that rummage around there, but it is a concern, so I said it.
It's there, it's in the universe. I think, you know, because I've been since diagnosed on, February 14th, 2000, just that I've been living with that which is classified as relapsing remitting MS. And you, Jennifer, are secondary progressive MS. And I think I remember writing an essay. It was after I'd lived with MS for 10 years, and just how I'd gone to my then neurologist, Dr. Call. And at that point, I did my MRI, no progression, everything's good. And it was just like, you know, when you're first diagnosed, and the literature at that point in time was saying that most people who have MS eventually go from relapsing remitting to secondary progressive MS after 10 years. And I honestly felt like I had totally dodged a bullet, and like I was living strong and everything. And so,
at the same time, you were feeling a little bit, I imagine you're living on borrowed time. Like,
oh,
how soon before that other, what is it?
The other shoe drops
and you're going to be reclassified as secondary progressive.
And that's a fair assessment, because I think that with every year, you're always celebrating things. It's like, okay, one more time. Because I think when you live with MS, I'm saying you in the sense of, you know, from my personal experience, it's like you're always looking over your shoulder, thinking that the MS is going to catch you, thinking that, okay, I'm doing well today. I mean, obviously it doesn't stop you from moving forward, but at the same time, it's hanging, lingering there. But now just where it's noticeable. I mean, because back in the day I was, you know, I was running, I was doing things, but then you just see how things start slipping and things are just different. And I mean, I don't, anybody who sees me walk, they know there's something wrong because I limp. Mm-hmm. I walk because I can't feel my feet. My legs are tired. And, you know, I've spent for the last week, I've been like getting my MRIs and getting all that in order and getting a blood test to make sure that I can go on in my next disease modifying therapy infusion, that I can do that. So I was getting blood tests, did my MRI, all like thoracic, cervical, and whatever, spine, brain, whatever. To go to see Dr. Braley to see what does it look like. And you brought it up. Not that I didn't think about it, but it's like you raised a great question, because it's just like, am I at that point where I would be reclassified? And I guess I'm not worried about it, but at the same time, you're worried about it. Because once it's there, I think when you're living with a chronic disease like multiple sclerosis, once it changes, you can't go back. And that's the biggest thing that's always scared me, is just knowing that once the damage is done, it's never going to change. And that sounds pessimistic, but that's just reality.
Yeah. And that is, I don't, in any way, I don't want to belittle that.
No.
And I said it, and it was a flip thing to say.
It wasn't flip at all, babe.
But it's just the reality. And I suppose I can ask you now in front of every listener, why? I mean, you have been going to physical therapy. I've been waking up at 6 o'clock in the morning to get ready so that you can leave for physical therapy at 7:30 for the last, what is that, four?
A couple, 3 weeks. Couple, and I'll be going weeks. For the end of the month.
Yeah. Who prescribed physical therapy for you?
Anybody and everybody, I think true. Well, no, but I truly think that it was Dr. Braley at the time for our last visit, and me being the non-committal patient. Well, okay. It's not that I'm non-committal, but it's like you get a
you're non-compliant. Rush.
Well, but it's like do exactly.
If this was Jennifer, her butt would be going to physical therapy. Yes, we're doing this in front of everyone.
I still love you.
We're fighting in front of the kids. Sorry.
So listen to your mother. But seriously, when you get the paperwork from your doctor, more often than not, I'm left with the thought of, oh, that's going to the physical therapy place. They're going to call to set up an appointment. Well, that didn't happen with Dr. Braley. And then just one thing leads to another and just life gets away from
and
you.
And then you have a hernia. Okay. And then you have hernia surgery. And I understand that. And that sounds, again, like I'm being flip, and I'm not. It's just life is busy. Life is busy. So I wondered if it was paperwork from your primary doctor or from your neurologist.
Well, but it came. It was Dr. Braley originally had prescribed it.
That's his neurologist.
Neurologist Dr. Braley had prescribed it. But then it just kind of sat there because nobody called me, and you know, so fine. Mm-hmm. But then you're just like, is this prescription still good? So then it's like, well, let's go to the primary, PCP, the primary care physician, to which then Dr. Stebbleton retires in December. And so we've been doctorless.
We've been in the perfect storm.
We've been there. And so when we finally got that appointment with the PA here in Mount Pleasant, I asked her for the prescription for physical therapy, to which then again, I'm waiting for the physical therapy place to call me to set an appointment, because that's how it had been in the past. But then seriously, it was after about like 3 weeks, I hadn't heard anything. Then I called, but then you get the meeting, and then it's like they're scheduling out like 6 weeks, so you have to wait. So long story to get to this point, that you know, that's how I got into, you know, physical therapy. The nice thing about it is going back to the same place, I was able to see the same physical therapist I had seen the last time I was there. So Stephanie is her name, and she's been amazing. And so she knows my situation, knows my story, knows she's actually was a CMU student. And so she remembered us, you know, from when she was a student. But it's just like, you know,
she has kind of a baseline to judge and to see if you've progressed or, and what did she say when she saw you for that first time, now that you're going back, you know, 3 weeks ago?
It was interesting just for the initial testing and stuff that they do to assess different things. There were a few things, like, cause she had seen, like, you know, progress from the last time I had been to physical therapy, just how I had gotten better from, you know, start to finish, and just how now this time assessing the results from my tests and things, some of the things I was worse than I was when I started the last time, but there are some things I did now that I actually either was better than when I finished last time or comparable. So I think, so that was encouraging, but at the same time, I'm weaker. You know, I'm weaker and I lack endurance because we've known that. I mean, my left side is so weak. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it's like working with her and just asking the question, it's like, you know, I'm like, can I, if I worked out and I did this and did the training, the exercises regularly, would I regain the strength to be able to do this, to compensate for this?
Ooh, and what did she say? I feel like we don't talk anymore.
I know, we have to wait to have a podcast before I come clean. Didn't I tell you about this? I think you were sleeping.
I wasn't sleeping.
Well, no, but no, I had asked her, and I think it wasn't a no, but it wasn't a, you know, obviously they're not going to say, oh, absolutely. But I think there was just like, I would be able to gain the strength back, but would it reverse the MS? Am I just weaker because of the MS or weaker because I don't do anything, you know, and I think that's the problem. One of the problems with working remote or working from home or working, you know, then I'll blame the hernia surgery and just like how much that has taken me out of doing daily regular things to help you, and that we're using the equipment now, the sit to stand, the Hoyer lifts, call it what you will. But it's just that I'm no longer doing that daily stuff to help you. So then was that my strength training at the point? Because now it's just, you know, because back in the day, I would stand you up. I would pivot you. I would use the muscle, the legs, the squat.
Every time I went to the bathroom, you would get me out of my wheelchair. You would stand me up and help me to use the toilet. And that's just the truth.
Help you into bed. I mean, that
caregiver Jen is doing a lot more and has done a lot more since you had your surgery 6 months ago. Mm-hmm. And she is doing a lot. And I think that that's good for you because we aren't straining your back. We aren't straining your muscles because I have always felt somewhat responsible for said hernia, that if you didn't have to transfer me all the time, you wouldn't have had that injury, but you have it and water under the bridge. I don't want to use an MS word. I don't want to exacerbate any weakness or, you know, I don't want to make things worse. So I can understand why you have not helped me for 6 months. Do you miss?
Yes.
You do. Why?
Well, I miss doing it because it's like that's one of the things that I don't want to say that we shared, but that's the thing. And it's just like that was me helping you. I miss it. I miss it in the sense that, you know, if you need to go to the bathroom, boom, we're done. You know, whereas now with the equipment, we have to pause to get you, you know, harnessed in to do this, to lift, to do whatever. Mm-hmm. And so I think then your bathroom trips at night, you know, when we're watching TV, we pause it. It's a good 20, 25 minutes before we're back because of all the stuff that goes into getting you into the sit to stand and stuff versus just going in, stand up, pivot, done, you know, pivot
and
back.
And I'm going to play devil's advocate.
All right.
Because before your hernia surgery, you would help me. And instead of the bathroom taking 25 minutes, it may take 40 minutes because you weren't able to stand me up. And there's my finicky leg sometimes wouldn't stand.
Spasm, yeah.
Whereas now we use the sit to stand, and yes, it takes longer because disability, everything takes longer, mm-hmm. but it's consistent. I know that your back won't be injured. I know that my knees won't be hurting. Mm. So
So given the take, it's the, you know, and I think that, yeah, I think those are nice things because like yesterday when we get up early, go to group and Alma have to come home and, you know, change quick, new things to turn around and go to a graduation open house. I don't need to save myself in terms of strength and energy mm-hmm. to help you stand up to make transfers because it's just like just put you in the sit to stand, do all that, hook it up and, you know, let the mechanics do it and then we're done. So, I mean, it takes a little longer, but like you say, it is guaranteed. But at the same time, am I falling that much more out of shape? And then I think those are things that any caregiver is going to have. It's just like, I don't want to overdo it. Even with the equipment, I don't want to overdo it to where I can't help you because I wanted to exercise and get stronger that way.
Yeah, and that's true, and that's, you're in a pickle.
Damned if I do, damned if I do.
Exactly. Yeah. That's just the reality of a caregiver, mm-hmm. like you said. I can imagine it's harder to carve out 20 minutes, 25 minutes a day to exercise when you work all day.
Yeah.
But if you can help me stand 10 times during the day, you know, between going and getting up and going and getting back in my chair and just do that, just your exercise is a lot easier. That's like, I can imagine women who have children. Mm. When you have the baby, you're carrying the baby everywhere. You're lugging the stroller. You're lugging like high chairs or any sort of baby equipment. And then when the baby grows up and you've stopped doing that or you aren't taking care of that, imagine weakness, or that's how you gain a little weight or you get a little weaker. So not to equate me to a baby, but it's just kind of easy to think like that.
Oh, absolutely. Well, and I think too, I think of parents, think of mothers who, you know, whoever parents, you know, you have one kid and you mm-hmm. go through with strollers, lugging, picking up, carrying, doing whatever.
I'm thinking of, you know, like car seats, yep. and yeah.
All that. And then once the baby matures and you no longer have to lift and do that, well, you have baby number two. You're so out of shape and you got to work your way back into it. And I think one of the big, you know, this is where I'll claim, I don't know what, it's just, you know, regular parents, as it were, quote unquote regular. After baby one matures and you're not doing this anymore and you get baby two, those two, you know, 2 years, 3 years, whatever it takes, you're out of shape, but at the same token, you haven't used the last 2 or 3 years living with a chronic illness that's progressively gotten worse.
Yeah.
So I mean, that's where, you know, parents can get back into shape more easily than somebody who's living with a chronic illness, who's been doing the caregiving for 25 years and all of a sudden you're out of shape.
Yeah.
And you're weaker and...
Never mind that the aging is just a natural yeah. part of life.
Yeah.
You know, you're the oldest you've ever been and you're the youngest you'll ever be.
Yeah.
And so that's hard, and that's something to think about. When we see Dr. Braley, What do you hope she tells you? Or, I mean, you're getting all these tests. You talked about an MRI. You've had blood tests.
My hope is that the MRIs don't show progression. I think that, you know, that to me, and I'm not a doctor, but to me, progression in my scans, that's definitely something that can't be fixed.
Right.
That is damage done. If that doesn't show anything, then this weakness of which I have, does that mean I can at least regain some of that strength to get back into shape? But I think there's that wrestling and not knowing one way or the other. So I'm hoping that the MRI doesn't show progression.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the biggest thing, just because it can be there. But at the same time, and then it's just like, and it's easy to say for somebody sitting back with relapsing or remitting MS, you know, to say, oh, well, it's just a label, blah, blah, blah. It's the same thing, because we know that we say relapsing or remitting, but it's just the reality that MS is always active. It's always, you know, it's always causing things. It's always doing stuff. So whether I'm relapsing or remitting or secondary progressive,
there's always progression.
Exactly.
And I said the word pickle before, but a new pickle that I don't want to bring up. The pickle that I'm thinking about, and that this is, you know, we haven't talked about this.
And we saved it for the conversation, yeah, so we can
and
be.
So forgive me if I get like emotional. I've been the one living with secondary progressive MS this entire time we've been married, and that's fine. That's me. You're the relapsing, remitting. You're walking. I'm rolling. Well, A, what the heck's going to happen if we both start rolling? But
you
I don't
have
want
to rebrand.
But I have to rebrand, certainly. But then, even in a smaller way, what drugs, what medication will you be able to take?
That's exactly, you know, when you're talking about pickles, I think that's the one thing that is concerning, is just that at this point in time, I don't believe, and I'd have to check this, the realities on this, but I don't believe there are any, maybe there might be one, but the fact that I can't think of the name of it right offhand says it's not regularly used, but just that you have all these disease modifying therapies for relapsing, remitting. And I know that Ocrevus has been, you know, for relapsing, remitting, and primary progressive MS, but that somehow things are skipped over the secondary progressive MS. So that's a concerning point for me, because like with you, what you say.
Well, and what's concerning is your new insurance or any insurance.
Yep.
You know, I am getting a rituximab. Mm-hmm. And I have secondary progressive MS, but somehow, thank God, I've been taking Rituxan for such a long time since mm-hmm. I was reclassified as secondary progressive MS, and I'm blessed to have that. I don't know, will you be able to take that if need be? I mean, I think the drug is fantastic. I think it's been like grand poobah, really treating.
Yeah.
Because I don't think I've gotten any worse. I'm certainly not any better.
Well, certainly it's maintained. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a big thing.
That's a huge, I mean, maintenance, consistency, that's wonderful words for me. So if you had to take a medication, would that be available for you? And if so, wonderful. If not, and you're insurance is a jerk and it's like, no, you've got secondary progressive MS, there's nothing for you, what would you do?
Cry.
Me too, babe. Yeah. This is scary, and I can't believe, you know, we haven't talked about this, and we've been married as long as we have. That's scary, and I know when we see the doctor, we'll ask all these questions, mm-hmm. and I will go because I haven't been to the neurologist. I don't know when the last time I had an MRI was, and maybe that's where I'm just like, I'm fine, you know, I'm still able to roll, and certainly, excuse me, I'm certainly weaker on my left side. I don't use that as much, but I still hold my own. I feel like this appointment, this next in-person appointment is really going to focus largely on you. And I know you aren't a big fan of being the center of attention, but I think it's necessary.
Well, I think, you know, but at the same time, let me ask this. I mean, had you not said anything, you know, this was just going to be a regular appointment. And I think it's just like, at what point can I look the other way? You know, I think so much is like with anything with my MS, there's so much that it's like, kind of like numbness in my hands when I was first diagnosed, and the numbness was always there. Some days was worse than others. And so on the days when it wasn't as bad, I'm thinking, oh, well, I think I'm getting better. This is going to go away. But then it's just, even if it's when it's quote unquote not so bad, then eventually you start accepting that as, and I'm going to use the new normal, but you accept this is how, I know how much you don't like that. But it's just to where there's that acceptance, or it's like tomorrow will be better, and then tomorrow's not better, but it's manageable, it's tolerable, you can deal with it. But then what happens when it gets worse? And so for me, with my weakness, with the standing, with the walking, you know, I think just in that, if we're going places and we have to walk a long ways, just how I'm hitching a ride on the back of your wheelchair because I can't walk that far because there's sidewalk cracks and I don't want to trip on them. And so, so I walk in the streets because there's less cracks that I could catch my foot on because I drag my left foot. Because it's weak, to which Stephanie will say, you know, so with the hamstrings and stuff, and just things are not as strong on the left side. So then I overcompensate other ways, or, you know, when I'm getting into the car, and then I'm, rather than pushing my left leg to get up into the van, I'm grabbing my jeans and pulling my leg up into the van because I don't.
You learn to work around.
Yes. I think that's a good word. It's just like the workaround, the compensating, and just like, how do you make this happen? And it's just like, you know, if it was a car, you can only tape it up so many times where you just need to fix it. And I'm not fixing it. I'm just, you know, taping things.
Right. And when you make the concession, or if Dr. Braley were to say, yeah, Dan, I think that this looks like more activity, more spots, more lesions than I've seen before, that's going to throw a couple into a tizzy where we're going to have to face things that we haven't faced, that we haven't talked about. So let's talk about them here. But you know what I'm saying? It's going to be different. And I think it will be more than we anticipated. And I don't want to borrow trouble. Normally when we see our neurologist, we kind of shoot the breeze with her. You know, hey, how's it going? Yeah, you know, doctor, how have you been? Are you doing new research or anything? And it's kind of, you know, high level. Just, oh, multiple sclerosis.
What is that?
Disease modifying therapies. What's new? We don't really talk. We don't get deep. And doctor does a fantastic job. I don't want to say that she's not doing a good job looking at your progression, but you're always stable.
Let me ask this then. Okay, two things. First one, you speak of insurance, and there's one drug that I was prescribed by Dr. Bailey and under new insurance because my company had been sold, but the new insurance denied coverage for it, and it's that which it was a compound pharmacy of which she gave me to help me walk. Well, I mean, just calling it what it is, I am not condoning or endorsing a drug by any stretch of the imagination, but it was for the compound pharmacy version of Empira, however you want to pronounce it. But it's like, that's the thing that's supposed to help you walk. And it doesn't like, it's not like a quick fix drug, but it like helps to build the endurance. I have not had the Empira for probably a year because my prescription ran out. And then once you get the new company and new everything with insurance, and I have a letter of denial of that. And so then would something like this, I'm taking it to Dr. Braley, and then she can say, and then she can file the appeal to say, no, Dan needs this drug because it helps him to walk and he's noticeably getting worse walking wise. And so is that a good thing?
Well, I think that's a hugely good thing.
That's why I saved it.
And I'm just so happy that we're having this podcast discussion so that I can say, or you can say, because you can speak for yourself, you know, what about the Empira? And can I get that? And if your insurance denies you, you can get compounded Empira. And boy, that's a good point. There's a lot that we're going to have to talk about with the doctor.
Let me ask you this. I mean, because, yeah, and I did. I saved it, and that's coming with us to Ann Arbor. But I guess my question for you then is that, you know, you had relapsing remitting, as everybody who's diagnosed more often than, you know, on 99.9% of the time is at least diagnosed relapsing remitting. What was that like for you as a young Jennifer Urich? Were you secondary progressive before we got married? Yeah.
Yeah, right around the time that you and I met, that's when I started using my wheelchair. It was a scooter at the time, but I started relying on assisted devices to get around. I never have walked since you've met me.
I've never known you to walk.
And that's when I started going down to Ann Arbor. My general neurologist would not prescribe a drug that's not even on the market anymore because he was concerned it was a chemotherapy-esque medication and he didn't feel comfortable prescribing it. So then I went down to Ann Arbor, and that's when I didn't even see Dr. Braley. I saw a different neurologist, and I had the experience of also seeing Dr. Aaron Boster.
Go Blue.
That's where he was at the time. And that's when I was reclassified as having secondary progressive MS. And it was devastating.
I was just going to ask, what was that like for you, seasoned veteran that you are? I mean, when you went for relapsing remitting.
That was not even 5 years after my diagnosis.
Yeah, so we were together.
I had gone through all the A, B's, and C's, and then, you know, there weren't lots of options. There were three drugs and Navandrone. I'll just call it what it was way back in the day. And I was able to try that medication, and that stabilized me.
What was that like for you when, I mean, compared to when you were first diagnosed, and then you get reclassified to secondary progressive? How devastating, or was it like, we're doing this?
Yeah, it was so we're doing this, because I thought, my God, oh, that was so long ago. Let me go back in my memory. I thought, you know, there's going to be new treatments. Hmm. Certainly there will be a cure. We'll have some myelin repair. Heck, it's, you know, I'm only 5 years into this. Give it another 5 years, there will be a cure at 10 years. Okay, maybe at 15 years. Oh, 20 years, there's certainly going to be a cure.
Yeah.
Okay, 25, where the heck is the cure? Where's the new treatment? And then you start seeing the immune modulating drugs that are on the market. And, you know, now I'm going to be close to 30. It'll be 30 years in 2027 since my diagnosis was likewise for you. It's going to be 28 years. It's not that I'm so much more.
Well, I mean, but I mean, once you get to that point, but.
I just was happy that I could have a drug, you know, with that knowledge that my disease was worse and that it was, I needed a bigger gun than what the AB season could offer. So, that's a really.
Yeah. Well, and like you say, we're not looking to borrow trouble. I mean, because maybe we'll go and it'll all be
Dr. Brady will
donuts
say,
and bubble gum.
Nobody says donuts and bubble gum. That's
cite my source. That's from shrinking. But anyway,
from shrinking. We watch a lot of television. But I think maybe what if we are borrowing trouble? Wouldn't that be beautiful? And Dr. Brady is like, dude, your MRI is fine. You're just as good.
You're just lazy. Get off your dead ass and start working out, Diggs.
Exactly. Your Ocrevus is holding strong and you're doing well.
Mm.
Then that's going to be great. But to use a Dan Digmanism, I'm the same person I was before I went down to see Dr. Brantley.
True. And it's like, I think that at this point in time, there's still ways, even if there is that elevation or reclassification, it doesn't mean that you can't, here I'll go third person, it doesn't mean that Dan Digman can't do more and do his exercises as he was to strengthen his quads and hamstrings and legs and energy and fatigue and stamina and stuff. So I think that if anything, that's the moral of the story. I mean, I appreciate you at least bringing it up so that it's not like thinking of worst case scenarios, but at least then it's that knowledge and just prepping ourselves that like what happens if we go to Ann Arbor and this happens. I mean, at least it's there, it's in our minds that we can adjust accordingly and doesn't blindside us.
It doesn't blindside us. It made for a good conversation here today. We also discussed it with our support group. And that, you know, that's great to hear the opinions and the perspectives of the members of our group. And they had a lot of insights. And
So, I mean, so you say that. What about everybody out there who's listening? Mm-hmm. I mean, what's it been like for you? And are these fears that you have, or have you been reclassified, you know, or elevated to, relapsing, remitting to secondary progressive, primary progressive? What's that like for you? And how did you compensate and get through? I mean, so, you know, reach out to us, email us. The email is acoupletakesonms@gmail.com. Just to let us know, or go to the website is acoupletakesonms.com. Just send us comments, because this isn't just the Dan and Jennifer show. I mean, we want to go, you know, talk to other people, because it's like your words, your experiences can help so many other people. So, you know, tell us and help me should anything get reclassified.
Right. And I hope that you will have a very good visit with the doctor, and that you will remember that you are the same person that you were the day before you went to the doctor. And maybe it will just be that we need to get our lazy butts up more and we need to exercise more and stop being afraid of injury. Stop playing scared.
I love that, because Cal Ripken Jr. did not make his consecutive start streak playing scared. You just keep go, you keep doing. And I think that's the big thing, is that, quoting Springsteen, let the broken heart stand as the price you got to pay. I mean, you just keep going, because it's like, if you sit back and just let things happen, you're not being proactive. You're not being aggressive. And I don't think, as I've said before, you and I have never lived our lives with MS passively. We're just like, And I think that's, you know, what's the worst that can happen? Well, it's like, if I've got you and I've got our community, you know, there's nothing we all can't get through together. And so, thank you.
You're welcome. And with that saying about our community, you and I both know that we've had friends, we have friends that have been reclassified with aging. Maybe that is more prevalent than we realize. That's why we need to lean on our community and hope that people will share with us their experiences. We're here. We're not just talking into a void.
Yeah.
We want to know what other people have to say. And after we go to the neurologist, I look forward to talking it up and shooting the breeze with you and talking about how things are going. So
and so be a part of that conversation with us. You know, chime in and let us know. Again, it's a couple takes on MS at gmail.com, or on our website is a couple takes on MS.com. Just to say, what's helped you and how have you dealt with stuff like that? Thanks for the conversation. Thank you for thinking of this, Jennifer, and asking the difficult question, because I'm just like, life is bubblegum and donuts, and we're doing this. So everyone, thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. Until next time, we are a couple takes on MS. I'm Dan Digman and I'm walking.
I'm Jennifer Digman and I'm roving.
And we are a couple takes on MS, and together we're moving forward. Take care.